Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Systems Change Deep Dive podcast, where we take a systemic look at some of the greatest social, economic, and environmental challenges that we are facing as a global community. And we also take a look at the ideas and the projects that have the potential to catalyze systems change. We are currently looking for this first season into the issue of carbon capture as a response to the climate crisis. And we have been hearing from experts around the world that are working on different approaches and solutions to carbon capture and beyond. Today, we welcome Brian Van Herzen, founder and executive director of the Climate Foundation, which upholds the mission and the vision to regenerate life in the ocean using marine permaculture. Brian leads the Climate Foundation's large-scale seaweed mariculture programs to develop sustainable food, feed, and fertilizer value chains, provide ecosystem life support, and sustain blue carbon sinks. Brian graduated from Princeton University with a degree in physics, and he also holds a PhD in planetary science from Caltech, where he was awarded the prestigious Hertz Fellowship, and he has been awarded numerous patents. After 2 decades developing system solutions for companies such as Intel, Disney, Pixar, Microsoft, etc., Brian launched the Climate Foundation to investigate groundbreaking nature-based solutions to climate challenges and other environmental challenges. He's currently leading an international team of scientists, engineers, technicians, social scientists, and seaweed farmers who are currently leading a successful marine permaculture deforestation demonstration project in the Philippines. So welcome, Brian. Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to start this interview by asking you, what inspired you to do this work?
Well, thank you, Carolina. I'll tell you, it's a real pleasure to be here today and to focus on the kind of regenerative capacity that we have to transform humanity's relationship with the ocean from one of extraction to one of regeneration. If we can feed the world, regenerate ocean ecosystems that we've plundered so severely, and finally, balance carbon from the atmosphere, that'll be a wonderful goal. And that was our original motivation, is to effectively regenerate life in the ocean and improve human food security as well.
Wonderful. So since we are doing a deep dive on carbon capture, I also want to ask you if you could explain shortly how your solution, your approach to this topic works.
Yes. Well, marine permaculture is perhaps the deepest carbon solution because literally we're able to sink carbon 4,000 meters in a matter of hours. Now, we do that by helping nature. You know, we have this principle in permaculture: give nature half a chance and she'll rebound with exponential bounty. And what that means in this case is let's fill the nutrient value chain gap that's created by climate disruption. And that is specifically that the water is too warm and the nutrient levels are dropping in the tropics, in the subtropics, even off your coastline of Portugal. Half the seaweeds have been lost. Half the kelp forests have been lost. We've documented the loss of thousands of square kilometers of kelp forest from Western Australia and the marine heat wave of 2011 to the eastern shores of Tasmania, with the losses of the Macrocystis kelp forest exceeding 95%. And now, just in the last 10 years, losses of over 90% of the Macrocystis and Nerocystis kelp forests north of Northern California, all the way up to Vancouver Island and British Columbia. So with all of those losses in place, we can document the loss of at least 4,000 square kilometers of kelp forest that need to be regenerated. And those ecosystem services can be restored. Natural upwelling can be restored with renewable energy. We can use marine solar in the tropics. We can use wave energy in temperate latitudes, plenty of waves off of Portugal. And we can use wind energy in the high latitudes to effectively restore natural upwelling, restore that Atlantic overturning circulation that people are so worried about, and do so between the mixed layer and the mesopelagic zone between 200 and 1,000 meters deep. And by restoring that natural upwelling, we can ensure a future for our kelp forests that in turn will provide a future for humanity.
Brilliant. So you already mentioned that you are restoring the ecosystem while creating the systems of marine permaculture, what are other side environmental side effects of the work that you do, say for biodiversity, for example, or fish stocks?
Yes, the kelp forest is absolutely essential. I've become a real fan of sardines. I had sardines on my last trip to Portugal, and sardines on the beach, it's hard to beat that. Of course, that is the only animal protein that is associated with health span, with greater health span for humanity. So aside from that, we should be, let's say, pescatarians or vegetarians. And an essential part there is that under business as usual, the EU has projected that the sardine fishery will collapse in the next 5 years off Portugal and Spain. And that would put 18,000 sardine fishermen in Portugal alone out of work. And I view this as being absolutely vital to create the fish habitat in the kelp forest. If you have a billion sardines, the sardine school is the habitat. But if you don't have a billion sardines because they've been overfished, then the kelp forest is needed to provide enough protection, enough habitat for the sardines so that they can repopulate. And to do that, we must ensure that the kelp forest from Portugal all the way to Australia can regenerate. And that's by providing enough restoring of natural upwelling to ensure those kelp forests can thrive. So it starts with restoring natural upwelling. We regenerate these kelp forests and their ecosystem services. We build that fish habitat and the sardines come back. They use the kelp forest as a refuge, almost a incubator. And eventually when there are too many sardines, they spill over and they make the giant schools that we all love, you know. But ultimately, I would say from Portugal to the Mediterranean, we would love to restore the sardines to Sardinia. And we see marine permaculture as a way to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the fishing industry, because my next question was going to be, so how do your activities support other local activities and local economies? So I guess this would support local fisheries and local fishermen, but are there any other integrations that you can see?
There are, you know, in just two countries, the Philippines and Indonesia alone, there are more than 3 million subsistence seaweed farmers, and each of them is allowed to cultivate 1 hectare of seaweed. And yet those communities today are collapsing. They're collapsing because the water's too warm, the nutrient levels are too low. And fundamentally, unless we can get nature back on track with having enough natural upwelling, you know, it's this climate disruption is affecting these communities. They're on the front lines of climate disruption, not only because of this these marine heat waves, but also because of the typhoons, cyclones, and hurricanes that are becoming increasingly frequent as a result of global warming. So from that perspective, we are located in the central Philippines, and we are at ground zero for a Category 5 hurricane that hits the central Philippines on December 17th. And that hurricane was devastating. It wiped out coastlines. It destroyed boats. The coastline land that we were leasing was underwater, and 4 of the 5 buildings were erased. And not only that, we were setting up a weather station to document how much wind there was, and we were worried about whether we would have enough support wires to keep the tower standing during the hurricane. But what we didn't realize was that the rock jetty that the tower was on would be completely erased by the hurricane, as with the rock wall, just missing. Like, take giant rocks and just erase them. And that's what happened on the coastline. 5 meter waves, 5 meters of storm tide, and 120 knot winds. And yet our submersible seaweed platform on the marine permaculture survived intact. And it was just 5 meters below the surface of the sea. So if you wish to outrun a hurricane, the best direction to go is down. And that's what we do. And not only that, half the seaweed was still on the platform after this event. So there's a shining ray of light, a silver lining to that devastating disaster. And that is, we have today the only proven submersible seaweed platform that has withstood a hurricane. It's hurricane proven, and it's something we can scale to hectares and beyond. And so those subsistence seaweed communities need to utilize this kind of technology to address the problems caused by climate disruption. So I would say from the seaweed communities of Southeast Asia to the fishermen around the world, we have sardine fishermen from the Philippines to Portugal, and they need to have livelihoods. They didn't cause the climate disruption, but they're on the front lines. They're the ones whose livelihoods are being threatened by humanity's continuing business as usual.
So that ties really well to my next question also, which is that have you seen your project affecting the well-being of these local communities where you have your prototype platforms?
Yes. Our initial growth trials, which were first at small scale, and just last year we scaled to 100 square meters, have demonstrated that we could rescue the production of these commercially relevant seaweeds 11 months of the year. And that's compared to, say, 5 months a year when the seaweeds can grow normally because it gets too hot and the nutrient levels get too low. And it's amazing. When we compare during the dry season, the growth rates, we get more than 100% growth rate per month of these seaweeds when the control seaweeds that are surface irrigated are shrinking in size because the water is too warm, the nutrient levels are too low. And so 11 months a year, we can restore replete growth. And that just means not only will these seaweed communities be able to survive in the future, but they will be able to thrive. And that thriving is what it's all about. To ensure that we'll be able to be resilient, I would say, for decades to come.
And do you normally have in your trials, is it easy to include local people in your teams? Maybe do you include any marginalized or indigenous communities in the work?
Yes, we do. Not only do we have seaweed farmers who come with us in their training and then planning to deploy marine permaculture platforms in their own communities across the Philippines, but we also have fishermen families, and those fishermen work with us on the boats to deploy the marine permaculture, help with the cultivation and the harvesting, and then the reseeding for the next crop. And so that's great because, you know, it's the combination of the small fishing boats, the skiffs and everything, and the seaweed farming technology that it enables this to come together and use the seaweed technology, but in deep water, which is not very far from shore. You know, we're only 1 or 2 kilometers from shore, and yet we're in 300 meters of water. So it's a very good situation, but there are many places off Europe as well where there's deep water near shore, and so many places to actually do this and be able to survive, let's say, even rough Atlantic conditions and enable those seaweeds to thrive. We're planning further experiments in the North Atlantic to demonstrate how we can ensure, let's say, 3 seasons of seaweed production instead of just one in the future.
Yeah, and I guess this would be a little bit more challenging, but are you able to source most of the materials that you need locally, or do you still need to bring a lot of the materials from a farther distance because of the technology? How does that work?
We're able to source most of them locally. So we use a variety of simple technologies. We start with bamboo, it turns out. Bamboo grows beautifully and very quickly, and it's a wonderful frame material for growing seaweeds on. And then furthermore, there are times where we use proven materials. We can, for example, use recycled polyethylene, which has a very long lifetime in the oceans, and we can do 100% recycling without plasticizers, which is really great. And we can actually extrude these materials that are hurricane proven and demonstrated to work. But literally, we've used a combination of those materials to build very simple platforms and buoys that are scalable using local in-country materials.
Great. That sounds awesome. And you also already mentioned that you do have some training programs with the farmers locally. Do you have also any kind of training programs that connect different areas of the world or different practitioners, just or educating the general public?
Yes, for example, we've done a masterclass for the Permaculture Education Institute with Maura Gamble in Australia, and she has a global following. And it was really an honor and a privilege to teach one of the master classes on marine permaculture. And she was inspired to say, you know, we should integrate the marine permaculture curriculum into the core permaculture teachings. And so we're enthusiastic to make that happen. And later this year, I'm happy to say that we'll publish an article with Dr. David Holmgren, who is, of course, the developer of the dozen permaculture design principles. And this article, which we're hoping will come out in One Earth, which is a new magazine by Cell, and it's going to be applying the dozen permaculture design principles to the marine environment. And what's amazing is these permaculture design principles that were designed for terrestrial environments, but with a deep understanding, apply so beautifully to the marine environment. It's incredible. And I learned from David that Bill Mollison in the 60s and 70s, before really getting permaculture going, was inspired by the very kelp forest off eastern Tasmania. And this was the environment where he saw the kelp, the seabirds, the sea mammals, all, you know, working together and building this very rich and diverse ecosystem. And then he applied it to the rainforest and the marsupials in Tasmania. So it was really from ocean, from sea to soil and back to sea again. It's a full circle.
Yeah, I really love that. I wasn't aware, but it seemed like, yeah, permaculture is going back to its roots with marine permaculture, really.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's for sure a dimension here that incentivizes people to kind of change their lifestyle as well a little bit. And this is something that I've been curious to ask is when I go to the Asian product markets in Lisbon, I always like to get the seaweed because it's really salty, really crispy. But not a lot of people, I guess, are aware that you can eat that and that it's good and healthy.
Yes. No, it's wonderful. And the dry seaweed products I love and I eat regularly, in fact, every day. And look what happened to me. but furthermore, we're experimenting now to develop new food products that will include fresh seaweed products as well as dry seaweed. And I think I'm enthusiastic about it because seaweeds have such a superfood status for good reason. And it's loaded with antioxidants, phytonutrients, and omega-3 fatty acids. And it's good to eat even dry seaweeds, but we think that we should be able to develop shelf-stable seaweed products that retain most of those antioxidants, phytonutrients, and omega-3. Because I've had fresh seaweed in Philippines with guiso, which is the vinaigrette dressing seaweed salad, and it's so good. It's the best seaweed salad I've ever had. And I want to be able to we'd love to develop these shelf-stable products that will enable really the deployment of these seaweeds globally in a shelf-stable form that will provide such great nutritional benefits to the world, especially 500 million vegetarians in India, and many in the US and in Europe as well. So I think that's so important because in many ways, seaweed is the original source, if you will, all the algae, original source of long chain omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA. And then the sardines just concentrate those and other nutrients. And so in many ways, going to the source is a good plan.
Yeah, and I'm also curious to hear your thoughts on just how scalable do you feel that this all is? So you've been working on it you're kind of pioneering this field. So how fast or how much money do you think it would take to be able to scale this to a sustainable level?
Well, the capital is a limiting factor, but the area is amazing. And so I would say, for example, we're working in one small sea in the Philippines, the Komodo Sea. And it's a million hectares, but you know, the most that's been under cultivation so far has been 1,000 hectares. So literally there's a factor of 1,000 to grow in one small sea. And then there's the Bohol Sea and the Sulu Sea and, you know, the South China Sea and the Pacific Ocean. So literally using less than 1% of one ocean, we can feed the world, we can regenerate life in the ocean, and we can export gigatons of carbon dioxide to the deep ocean, to the seafloor. And to me, that's transformational. So it becomes a matter of capitalization. Our first hectare will cost $3 million to produce, but we've already raised the funds to build 1/10 of a hectare this year. And we have a pledge from one of our benefactors to fund the first million of our 3 million campaign to build the first hectare next year. So assuming we hit our milestone this year, that's going to be an incredible, incredible achievement. So with that in mind, as we build the first dozen hectares, we expect to get the capital cost below a million per hectare and ultimately enable private financing of projects that will enable sustainable seaweed mariculture to take place and be climate resilient. And that's really essential because we're going to have more and more marine heat waves as we go forward. It's very predictable. And, you know, we have to ensure that, for example, Portugal doesn't lose most of its kelp forest, doesn't lose most of its seaweeds, that these are essential ecosystems and keeping them alive is absolutely essential. And we can literally stave off the Permian mass extinction, one marine permaculture sea forestation at a time.
Great. So it seems like you are really hopeful about you look with a really hopeful gaze onto these climate challenges and carbon capture challenges that everyone seems to be really overwhelmed by.
That's true. You know, we've been working on this for a dozen years, and I feel as though the technology is already in place. It's something that we really have proven, since 2019 with our continuous deployments in the Philippines and soon to be in Australia and other parts of the world. And as a result, it's really about building the will to raise the capital that we need to launch this sustainable industry for subsistence seaweed farmers and fishermen, forage fishermen, around the world for sardines and anchovies, and really to build those sustainable industries that will be able to scale exponentially and ultimately be the change that the planet needs on a planetary timescale.
So for anyone that feels inspired by what they've just heard from you, what would you recommend that they could maybe do to help or even eventually get involved in this type of work?
Definitely. Well, check out our website at climatefoundation.org. Feel free to write to us, info@climatefoundation.org. And we're planning in the next quarter to launch a crowdfunder to build the first marine permaculture pilot scale system in North America. We're planning it for the West Coast of the US. And literally, we've just gotten indication of a major philanthropist that will provide us with the matching funds needed for dollar for dollar matching. So with $250,000 raised, and this dollar for dollar match, you know, somebody puts in $10, it provides $20 of good. And the net result is that we get to that point where we're able to deploy North America's first system. We could do the same in Europe as well in the future. And we've been engaging with colleagues in Spain and Portugal and other parts of Europe to enable these projects in the future. And it begins with just a small 100 square meter platform, but then we can easily go to a hectare and then be building dozens of hectares in each country that's a big ocean nation, including Portugal.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of these wonderful insights from the work that you're doing. I bet everyone that's watching is feeling very inspired. And if we're going to drop these links in the description for anyone that wants to check out the Climate Foundation and write to Brian. Again, Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Carolina. It's my pleasure.
Thank you.